This season of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast is proudly supported by Tanara Music Practice Platform.
Hi everyone, it's Tim here, and just before we get started, I've got a very exciting and important update to share with you today. In the next couple of weeks, you're going to notice a few changes occurring at timtopham.com, starting with the launch of our brand new name, topmusic.co. If you'd like to find out more about the new name and our rebranding process, please head to timtopham.com/topmusic, where I lay out all the details. Now, let's get on with the show.
Hi everyone, it's Tim here, and I wanted to let you know that tickets are now on sale for my very own Piano Teachers Conference being held here in Melbourne in January 2020. It's called Piano Pivot Live, and you can get your ticket and find out all the details now at pianopivotlive.com. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, reading my blog, and getting inspired by fresh lesson and business ideas, then this is the conference for you. This two-day experience will bring together your favorite speakers, unpacking topics from creative pedagogy to marketing, preschoolers to technology, and everything in between. You'll get all your morning and afternoon tea, snacks, and a full lunch included in your ticket price. And while I know you'll get inspired by our keynotes and get practical in our workshops, what I'm most excited by is the chance you'll have to work with our speakers and experts in small group mastermind and implementation sessions to help you ensure you get a return on your investment in 2020. So if you've ever thought about visiting Melbourne or Australia, then this is your chance. It will be the perfect start to a new year of teaching, hanging out with other teachers from around the world, getting inspired, planning your studio, and making real change for the year ahead. Buy your ticket now at pianopivotlive.com before they all sell out. Okay, let's get on with the show.
Welcome to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast, the place where teachers from around the world meet to share innovative ideas about music education. Listen and learn as we help you motivate your students, grow your income, expand your studio, and become a more creative piano teacher.
Hi everyone, it's Tim Topham here, and welcome back to Season 3 2019 of the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. I'm so delighted that you've decided to join us today and look forward to unpacking this episode with you, and I'll introduce my guest in just a moment. But before that, some quick updates from the world of Top Music Co. For those of you who didn't see the announcement, yes, we are changing our brand from timtopham.com over to topmusic.co, and I'm delighted to announce that our domain name has recently changed, so do update your links. If you'd like to find out more about why I'm doing this, how it's going to work, what's changing, what's not changing, then head to topmusic.co and just scroll down the page until you find the blog post about introducing Top Music, and I'll give you all the details there. I'm truly excited about this change. It's been in the works for a couple of years. I've wanted to do this, and I've kind of been delaying it and putting it off because changing domain names isn't the most fun experience and can impact a lot of search traffic and things like that. So we've been doing it as well as we can and in a very planned way. But that's the first step in our rebrand to Top Music, and there will be more announcements and more changes coming as we unveil the rest of the program. Once the domain name has changed and settled and we've been re-indexed, then you'll see some other things happening towards the start of next year. Very, very exciting stuff. So do go and check that out. Topmusic.co is where you'll find all my stuff from now on. Now, just keep in mind too, if you are still looking at old articles or old videos, or you still just have a habit of going to timtopham.com, that's totally fine. Those links will still work and you'll be redirected to the correct site, but we will try and start using topmusic.co. Now, a couple of quick reminders for Piano Pivot Live. So firstly, our scholarship program, which we announced just recently, we're offering 50% scholarships to teachers who are really new to the profession, who don't have a teaching degree at this stage and who have only been teaching for 2 years or fewer. We would love you to apply for one of our scholarships. So I'm talking to all of you guys out there, mainly the piano teachers and music teachers of the world. If you have students who you have mentored through and perhaps been teaching for years and years and years, and they're starting to show interest in teaching, maybe you've started giving them some of your students, or they're helping you in a team teaching fashion in your group classes or anything like that, and you think they would would love and get lots from an event like Piano Pivot Live, then make sure you get them to apply for our scholarship, because we would love to have them there. I have always been passionate about supporting our next generation of teachers, and this is no exception to that. We would really love to have a number of young, new teachers there who are just getting started, because I know just how much of an impact a conference experience like this and the connections they'll make and the activities they'll do and the planning they'll get and the connections with their speakers and things like that that they'll experience will be second to none. So do find out more about that if you've got someone in mind, or you yourself are a new young teacher. Perhaps you're just 18, 19, just starting university or thinking about teaching, whatever it is, head to pianopivotlive.com and have a look for the scholarship link in the menu, and you can get all the details there. The application date is the end of November, I believe. So there's not too much time to get onto that, a couple of weeks, and do spread the word. If you're a piano teacher out there, please spread the word about this to other piano teachers who you know might have younger teachers under their wings. And secondly, and finally, for my announcements for today for Piano Pivot Live, if you are not aware, we have an amazing giveaway going on at the conference. Kawai, our principal sponsor, are giving away a almost $4,500 brand new digital piano. And one lucky person at Piano Pivot Live is going to win this, and it's going to be delivered to your door. And this is for Australian residents, of course. So I'm afraid we can't deliver to England or America at this stage. But if you come to this conference and you have a ticket for Piano Pivot Live, you'll be able to enter the draw for the Kawai piano giveaway. Have a think about what an impact a brand new digital instrument would make in your studio. Could you finally get rid of the old honky-tonk in the corner? Could you finally have a second piano when you've only been struggling with just one piano? Could you perhaps change one of your other pianos and give it to a student who really needs it and use the new Kawai in your studio? I don't know. There's lots of different opportunities here. But I can't wait to give this away to someone. It's going to be very, very interesting, very, very exciting, I should say, to announce this at the conference. So you have to be at the conference to enter this draw. So grab your tickets now while they last. They are disappearing pretty quickly. PianoPivotLive.com. Grab your ticket, and I can't wait to see you there. All right, let's get on to today's show. And today we're talking about technique. And this is great because we had a webinar only a few weeks ago, which was incredibly popular. We had almost 2,000 registrations. It's the most I've ever had on a webinar. And we dove into this topic of technique, which is often a challenge for teachers because there's so much information out there and so many different ideas about what we should do and what we shouldn't do. What I have learned over time, though, is that there are a number of things that just about every really good teacher in the world agrees with that we should all be doing. And really, there's no question that these are the right kind of approaches. There's different ways of teaching them, but the fundamental approaches are the same. So today we're going to unpack with one extraordinarily talented teacher, and she was on the webinar. She was one of my guests on this webinar. So if you can picture the four people who are on the webinar, there was two guys and two girls. One of them is on today's show, and I'm going to introduce you to her in just a moment. And for today's show notes, full transcript, all our links, all of those kinds of things, you can head to topmusic.co/episode177. There you go. The new domain. Try it out. And just remember too that we have added jump links in the show notes page. What are jump links? Well, it means that we've actually listed out all the main topics and questions that I ask all my guests on podcasts. And you can click when you see a question, maybe it's you're interested in rotation or buckled knuckles or something, and we talk about that in this podcast. You can click that link and the audio will play from where we discuss that in the episode. How cool is that? It's on the episode show notes page. So topmusic.co/episode177 is where you're going to find that. Try it out. Let me know what you think. My guest today is Associate Professor of Piano at Auckland University and is one of New Zealand's foremost piano pedagogues. Her teaching has produced many outstanding pianists, including first prize winners in the Sydney International Piano Competition and the Lev Vlasenko Australasian Piano Competition. She has served on international competition juries in Dublin, Singapore, and the USA, and many of her former students are established as pianists throughout the world. She received a Teaching Excellence Award from the university in 2011 and in 2015 was made a member of the New Zealand Order of Merit for services to music. Her groundbreaking PhD on focal dystonia has resulted in specific concepts about instrumental retraining, leading to many international presentations and keynote speeches. Her recently published interactive ebook, which we're going to talk about in this episode, it's called Fit for Piano, is a fun resource designed to assist the development of a coordinated technique. By establishing movements that are natural from the beginning of learning, progression through the grades is uncomplicated, rewarding, and pleasurable for both teacher and student. The book contains more than 80 high-definition videos of exercises and musical examples showing how these concepts are relevant, whether playing the easiest pieces or advanced repertoire. And I have to say, I can't wait to unpack this book with you because I've had a look through it and it's pretty amazing. The videos are just so good because you get not only beginner demonstrations, but you also get advanced music demonstrations. So if you do have advanced students playing Chopin ballades and etudes and things like that, then this book will help you with those as well. All right, let's introduce our guest. Welcome to the show, Ray DeLille.
Thank you, Tim. Nice to be with you.
So now people might have already picked up that you have an accent that isn't Australian and it's not American and it's not British. So you better tell us a little bit about where you're from and what kind of teaching you're doing at the moment.
Okay, Tim. Well, I'm a New Zealander and I live and work in New Zealand. I teach at the University of Auckland. My background is that I had 8 years studying and performing in London way back when I was in my 20s, and then I returned to New Zealand and started performing and teaching, and now I'm associate professor at the University of Auckland. So that's the main part of what I do.
And how long have you been in that associate professor role?
Not very many years, Tim. I mean, I worked, as for all these university postings, it depends where you are and what suits you at the time that a job comes up. So I really only got my job about, less than 20 years ago. So, yeah, I'm a relatively new chum there, but have some great students and enjoy it.
Yeah. And so you're teaching just college level students at the moment, right?
Well, I also have a few private students, and when somebody's is particularly talented or serious about piano, I might find a little bit of time to give them. But that's pretty much my full-time commitment.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, we're going to dig into a new book that you've created about piano technique shortly. But I think it might just be wise that we discuss what the word technique means, particularly as related to piano playing for you. So when we're talking technique, is it about how we move at the piano? Is it about whether we bend our knuckles backwards or forwards? Or what is technique?
To me, technique is the facilitation of being able to play so you can play with the best musical expression that you have in your heart and soul. And if we minimize all the technical difficulties, then we're free to express ourselves musically. So that's, I guess, my mission in life is to help people to play with ease.
Yeah. And when you approach a piano as a new student, I mean, it seems quite simple, doesn't it? There's keys laid out in front of you. You press one down and it makes a sound. As opposed to trombonists who have to get their embouchure right or violinists who have to get their intonation right. For piano, it's kind of easy in some ways anyway to get the basics. But I think maybe that's where we come a little bit unstuck, because we can make good sounds by just pressing down keys, but that doesn't necessarily give us that facility that you're talking about. Would that be right?
Well, I'm not sure if I got all that question, Tim, but yes, I think that is where we come unstuck. I mean, violinists spend absolutely ages just bringing the bow across the string and playing single notes. And on the piano, because we can push these buttons, often that's where people stop and they just continue to play by pushing the buttons down without actually really considering how they're making the sound. And I think really at every level, it's how we make the sound that is the most important thing.
Mm. And you also mentioned at the start of the book that this has changed over time as well. The instruments of the Baroque era were very different to the instruments of today, and yet some aspects of the technique have remained the same, some have changed. So would you say that the approach to using fingers versus the whole body, that's changed over time, hasn't it?
Well, yeah. The problem is that when the piano was invented, up till that time, people had been playing harpsichords. So or clavichords or whatever, but the key weight and everything else about them was really very different from what we use for the piano. And so what happened when people started to play the piano is that they started having to use extra weight and extra pressure in order to make the sound. And then people started getting injured because they were putting too much strain on their bodies. So interestingly enough, then after that, they thought, oh no, what we must use is lots of arm weight and lots of relaxation. But then, of course, they forgot about the stability. So in the end, we need to train the stability, but also the connection of the rest of the body. So I think those are probably the most important things that I think about technique.
Mm. And the more you unpack it, the more complex it can become. I'm interested to know that note that you've created a new book on technique when there are quite a lot of them around already. And over here in Australia, I can think of a couple. Max Cook's Tone, Touch and Technique was very popular here back 20, 30 years ago. And more recently, Jackie Sharp created something called Technique Trainer. And then you've got the Taubman approach, videos galore and all that kind of stuff. So what made you decide that you could create something that was truly unique and could fill a spot that hasn't already been covered?
Well, one of the things I did, Tim, was that I traveled around the world and I talked to quite famous teachers about their ideas about technique. And I found that people have very differing ideas. You know, as you mentioned, the Taubman approach, it's one idea. And I went on their workshop and I spent a week learning about the Taubman technique. And then I went to Barbara Lister Singh's workshop and I learned a little bit about her technique. And, you know, I have interviewed an enormous number, about 40 or so pianists around the world and pedagogues. And I guess it's a culmination of all these ideas that caused me to write the book. But the other thing is that I feel that although there's lots and lots of technique books out there, many of them are quite complicated. I mean, if you pick up a book about Matte, it's you know, this thick, and it would take ages to read. And to be honest, I think they're too dry. So yeah. I wanted to create something that was simple, it was user-friendly, it's full of video, not too many words, but something that is a resource that people can dip into. Just whenever they come across one particular concept, there it is. You can go to page 47 or whatever it is in the book and find some exercises which will help that concept or help that moment in whatever piece they're doing.
And I really like that this isn't just a book either. I mean, it's the book's almost the basis of the way you've linked to all the other resources. So you've got videos on just about every page, and there are videos from you and some of your students in action. You've got interactive things that you can click on for more detail. They've got musical examples. I really like the videos of you performing those aspects of technique that you're talking about in the famous repertoire at all levels as well. I think it's phenomenal. I was very impressed by your Winter Wind etude, little bit there. That I could
tiny
work 10 years on
there,
that.
Tim.
I could work 10 years on that and still not be able to play it. So did you want to also, was interactivity an important part for you?
Absolutely. I figured that, well, we always say, don't we, that a picture is worth a thousand words. And I thought if we take these very simple movements and show how they're relevant, whatever we're playing, I figured that would be important. The other thing about these little exercises is that part of the reason for developing them was that when we get students at the university, they've come from all kinds of backgrounds, and we get a lot of students who've been trained with very rigid finger movements, which, and often their arms and their wrists haven't even been thought about. And so I wanted to find a simple way of getting my ideas about how to coordinate the technique across to these students when we have really only 26 teaching weeks in the year, so we can't spend hours just getting them to sort things out. We need something really simple. So I introduced a set of exercises for them some years ago, And happily, we've had a great reduction in injury rate since that time. And it's given me a sort of a toolbox that I can use right across whoever students they are, because a lot of the students, we have 45 piano students, and they're not all mine. Mm. And it just means that we're all on the same page, and that's really worth a lot.
I think it's important too, just to reiterate, that you have tested this over the course of a number of years. It's not just here's Ray's cool ideas and go for it. It's actually here's Ray's ideas that she's tested with students, and you've been able to see a decrease in injury rates and more freedom and flexibility in people's playing. I think this is important to highlight because that's not necessarily the case for other books. And I imagine that comes from your research, your background in education.
Yeah, I actually really enjoy the fact that I now have students in the community that are using this book, and the students that they teach, it's very easy for me to go in and give an additional lesson or a masterclass. And again, we're all talking the same language, so it means I can get a pretty instant result with them if I want to change something.
And I have to say that I think the images, you've had an illustrator create images for this book, haven't you? They are phenomenal.
Yes. Yes, I went to the Department of Fine Arts and I said to them, can you give me a graduate student that's got a real good idea about movement and children's books and things like that? And they found me this wonderful Juri Ogura, and she just understood the sort of movements that I was trying to express. And she'd done a little bit of piano and she was kind of interested, and we came up with these concepts. And that's how the book got illustrated.
My favourite is the when you're talking about rotation, and there's a picture of a dog shaking its, it's a still image, obviously, but the dog is shaking its coat left and right like a rotation. I thought that was brilliant because she's captured the movement in this still image brilliantly.
Yeah, I had to really think hard about that one. For many years, I used to call it the washing machine exercise, but then, of course, people stopped having top-loading washing machines and it wasn't quite the same exercise anymore. So that's why I suddenly thought, well, what else does that kind of movement? And I thought about a dog and I thought, maybe that'll do. And I love her picture. I think it's great.
It's very cute. Now, why Fit for Piano? Why this name? Because it sounds kind of athletic or sports-like.
Well, you know, I think musicians are athletes. And I mean, if you really analyze the number of movements and the number of repetitions that we do as a musician, I forget what the number is, but one researcher analyzed, you know, something like 144 repetitions per minute or something. And any sports trainer would absolutely go cold with fear if they thought someone was doing that number of repetitions in a minute. And so we do need to be kind to our bodies, and we do need to use them in a coordinated way. And so therefore we need to be fit. We need to be fit not just with our fingers, but with our whole body. And I think that's really, really important.
And I think you mentioned somewhere in there about how maybe rushing through Hannon exercises and scales at top speed as the first thing that you do might not be the approach that sports people would take if they're going to warm up, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, what athlete would start to warm up by running 100 metres at top speed? I mean, they just simply wouldn't do it. They start with slow stretches and they get their bodies in tune. And I think we should think of the same thing as a musician. And I mean, with the exercises in the book, they make quite a useful warm-up. I know one professional pianist that I've worked with closely, and she actually uses them every day just to warm up her body. And she says they really help the freedom of her playing.
It's one of those things that are so easy to forget, like stretches and loosening up the actual upper body. I remember my teacher talking about that, but I always forget to do it, unfortunately. It's just, yeah, you get straight into it because there's so little time always. So what do you think are some of the biggest mistakes, or even if you could narrow it down to one or two key ideas, what are some mistakes that you see teachers make with beginning students that you've articulated solutions for in this book?
Well, first of all, I think they start with the fingers, and they start with legato, or starting to try and connect five fingers. Well, for a start, you know, we've got very different lengths of our fingers. Our thumb's short, our other fingers are long. And so straight away, if we start in a five-finger position, especially if we start with middle C, we're going to be putting our hands into a very twisted position, and we call that ulna deviation, and you can't do it without tension. So if we start our students in a way that's going to cause them tension, we're going to lose all that wonderful freedom that kids have when they first come through the room as a five-year-old or a six-year-old. We want to retain that. So that's why I start in the book with just dropping on a key, with using the hola, using the wrist, keeping that wonderful freedom that they have when they're kids, and then taking that further forward. So my approach, I guess, rather than just five fingers, which is really focusing on fingers, I prefer to start with the arm and to start with the gross movement. In the same way as kids learn to walk, they learn to walk and run with gross movements, and that's gradually refined. So it's not by doing these exercises, which have rather large movements to start with, that doesn't mean that that's what we retain. What it means is that we retain the freedom as we reduce the movement into something which is more controlled.
I'm super delighted that Tanara is supporting this season of the podcast and wanted to take a minute to tell you what they offer. Tanara creates an inspiring community for music teachers and students throughout each week. We know that apps don't teach quality music. Teachers do, and Tanara can make your teaching even more engaging. Help your students discover the difference effective practice can make. Tanara is available on mobile, tablet, and desktop. So head to tanara.com, that's T-O-N-A-R-A.com, and sign up for a 30-day free trial, or head to your respective mobile store on your device and download the app. Let Tanara create happiness in your studio today. I've had an interesting experience recently with one of my boys who taught himself using one of the apps online and was playing, which was great because he was very inspired and he was playing cool things and he really enjoyed it. When I started actually working on the technique with him though, and we introduced some freedom of movement and this the kind of lifting off that you do in the start of your book, and most technique books do some kind of lift off or rocket launch, I think Daniel McFarlane calls it, or whereby you're playing but your arm is quite loose and there's freedom. And he said, without me prompting, he said, "Oh, this feels so relaxed." And I'm like, "Yes, absolutely." Because the natural way we approach any new instrument, I find, and I did it when I learned trumpet as well, is you kind of grip it really hard or you play really, there's tension straight away. So I think that's one thing that I've learned is that you can't skip over, even though it's kind of boring and a little bit dull for beginner students, you can't skip over getting the movement right from the beginning. And I also like that you get them to put their thumb behind one of their knuckle joints, their last knuckle joint, just to strengthen that when they're playing just those nice big gross motor drops onto the notes of the keyboard. I think it does make a big difference.
That's absolutely right. We do need to have those stable joints, because if one joint isn't supported, then another one's going to be overworking in order to compensate. So we don't want that. We want all the joints to be working together. And I really believe all of those joints can be trained right from the very beginning. And it's much easier if we train them early than as we find when they get to university, they've been playing for 10 years and they've got these wobbly fingers and you think, oh, here we go again, we've got to fix that. Because if you leave that instability in the joints, it's going to cause problems in later life, and we need to fix it.
Yeah, although I have heard the argument the other way, that sometimes some of the buckling of the knuckle, that last knuckle joint, doesn't affect. I've had some people, you teach high level students, so you could feel free to disagree, but I have heard some people say that actually worrying about that right at the beginning isn't as important as just getting the touch generally and the big movements right. If that last joint does buckle, students will in time learn to build strength there. Would you agree with that or not?
Well, I don't see any reason why we can't start to train it right at the beginning. So we can do very, very simple exercises. One of mine is spyglasses. You know, we can look through the spyglasses and tap. I mean, very simple, takes only a number of seconds. And if they do it every day as part of their practice routine, they're going to be setting up those joints to be stable. So it's not that we correct every moment as they're playing, we correct the general principle and then gradually build it into the pieces, or make a little exercise within the piece that's going to reinforce it.
Mm. And I think the okay symbol, that's a good one to do. You do the spyglasses.
Okay, it's great.
I mean, no kid does the okay looking like a chicken head, right? I always make that joke with
my kid. No, we want a nice round symbol, right?
That's right, yeah. So let's talk through some of the key kind of features of the book, and feel free to bring out some important points that you're thinking of as well. I want to just talk quickly about posture, because so much of the difficulties I see in videos that are shared online where teachers are going, what's wrong with this child? Why can't he or she do this? And why are their fingers everywhere? You just have to look at how they're sitting, and it's a bit of a disaster. So some tips on that?
Yeah, I think posture is hugely important. The first thing to establish is the height of the stool, which is going to be different for each student. And so important that we have an adjustable stool or something that can be changed so that the height is right for that student. And I guess the general principles for me are that the elbow is aligned with the base of the white keys. As a general rule, that's where it sits best. Obviously, we need shoulders dropped and relaxed. We need actually support from the core, because otherwise, if you sit in the wrong place on the seat, we should be sitting on the little rockers that are called the sit bones, and you should be able to rock in any position on those sit bones. If you sit behind the sit bones, we're going to get the banana back, the slouch that way. If you sit in front of them, then the back will tend to be arched, and you want the back to be in its neutral position. Another real problem with pianists is that they do this sort of thing because they hunch forward, often reading the notes, and we often put our heads forward as well like that. So all of this needs to be as open as possible. One of my colleagues in New Zealand talks about letting your sun shine out, and I really like that, you know, letting the sun shine
out. Opening the chest
out. Opening the chest and sitting on the right point of the sit bones, not too close. Your arms need to be able to move freely as you're sitting, so that, and then you need to, as you're sitting on those sit bones, you can rock from side to side very effortlessly and change your position depending on where on the keyboard you're playing.
Yeah, so important. And I also think it's really important too, if you're not teaching in a student's home, many of us don't, then find out how they're sitting at home. Are they sitting on the floor of their bedroom with a keyboard? Or are they sitting properly?
Yeah, at least if you can't go and visit, you can get them to take a video of or you know, a picture of their setup, and then you can direct from there. But you know, it's no point if you correct somebody in a lesson and they go away and they do something quite different. But that's hugely important.
I agree. Now, legato versus a detached motion. You said you're very pro detached to start with, to build the strength and the gross motor. Can you tell us a little bit more about that approach?
Well, first of all, if the traditional books often start with the five fingers, which pulls our hand into a funny position.
You're saying those books that start with both thumbs on middle C means that your hands, your elbows are kind of in and your hands are turned outwards, and it's just kind of unnatural.
Well, it's more that this nerve here is twisted, and it's really, really bad. So better that they were starting two octaves apart, really. But the reason I start with the general arm drop on the keyboard and just gestures of two and three and four notes is because that starts the freedom off. Then we can move on to legato playing. And I guess for legato playing, I wouldn't start with five notes. I'd start with two. Let's get two notes rocking from one note to the other and back again. And let's use some black notes as well. And then maybe we can use three notes or four notes, whatever. But I would start without the thumb until that felt really stable, and just where the arm comes out of the body, not over the front of the body, but where it comes out. And then we can build from there.
And you've got a number of exercises that do, this is exactly the flow that you have in your book. You start with two notes and you have exercises around that. It's great. You can click on the video to show, to see exactly what you're talking about. And then you can see you in action, demonstrating it in repertoire, which I, as I said at the start, I think is great too. So you get a really sequenced approach, which I did like. And I like that you give everything a name too. And I know Daniel McFarlane, who I mentioned before, he does something similar. All of your technique ideas have names. Can you tell us a few of them?
Well, I guess I was just, those names are kind of the result of years and years of teaching experience and just things that have cropped up during my lessons. I didn't sort of set out to put names on everything. They just kind of happened. And so I started thinking, well, let's make some pictures of those movements so that people can grasp it quickly with a visual image. And so that's where the names came from. They were just things that came along. I didn't set out to think about them.
Right. But they do help. Can you think of any off the top of your head?
Of the movements.
Yes.
Well, the one that I really love is the infinity movement, which, you know, moves like this, like a roller coaster. And that took us a little while to find a picture for, I must say. And I said to my artist, I said, well, what about a roller coaster? So she said, great. she got it then. But, you know, this kind of figure of eight feeling, which is a way of undoing the upper arm and making that part of the technique free, that's been a very useful exercise at the more advanced levels, because it enables you to move across the keyboard really freely.
Mm. And for those listening, Ray was kind of doing a on the side figure of eight in front of her body, a little bit like a conducting motion, actually. And it was interesting to, because one thing that a lot of technique books don't do is cover all levels of student technique. And you, in this book, in under 100 pages, I think it is, managed to get right up to serious octave playing, advanced technique, repeated notes, all of that kind of stuff. So it's not just for beginners at all, is it?
Well, no, it's not. I mean, as I say, I use it with my university students. And I know at another university in New Zealand, they are using that with their piano students. And we're using it in that context really because it simplifies the movements and gives us a tool to put into repertoire. Then obviously the repertoire is much more complicated. But the movements can be taught really early on. And I guess it's been my background of teaching at all levels. You know, I mean, I did spend a lot of years in the community where I taught from 4 and 5 year olds upwards. And that kind of experience, I guess, at how you convey the movements has really helped my understanding of what to say to more advanced players. I mean, it's all the same thing.
Mm. So what about relaxation? We hear this word quite a lot in piano technique. If we're completely relaxed, then we would be a blob of bones and skin on the floor. If we're completely tense, then that's the opposite. One thing that is talked about a lot is this idea of you need to be tense until the note is sounded or whatever, and then you've instantly got to relax. And
right.
While this sounds great, in practice, I think it's a lot harder, particularly for people who aren't taught this from the beginning. So what tips have you got for approaching this with students?
Well, I must say I run a program at the university called Musicians Health, which we have a combination of med students and music students. And we had a physiotherapist the other day. And one of the things he did, he talked about emptying. So you play a note and you empty it. And I really like that because, you know, you can just play one note and then you just empty that tension straight away. And I think one of the biggest problems that people have at the piano is that they keep on pressing up to the note is sounded. Whereas in fact, we need to play a note and we could hold it down, but we must have no pressure. So that thing of instant release, you know, it only takes 1/100 of a second to make a sound. So that 1/100 of a second is the only amount of time we need to press. And after that, we should be releasing.
And if you want to know how to do that, then you'll have to look in the book, I guess, which is good. Now, this isn't a method as such. I think this book goes alongside someone using a method at whatever point they choose to bring that in. Do you recommend any particular methods that align well with your approach?
I'm afraid I don't. I think that a lot of methods out there are very valid. And I think, as with all methods, it depends how they're done. So I guess my mission in writing the book was to say, consider these things in whatever method you're teaching, because I believe that whatever method people are using, I wouldn't start with one of those thumbs on the methods, I have to say. But there's lots of great books out there that people have come up with, and you know, other methods that people use. This is more a resource, so it's a resource that people dip into and think, how do I want to play staccato? What ideas have we got here? That's I guess the mission of the book, not to be an all-encompassing method. It's not that at all. And it's not a progressive thing that you start at the beginning and you work through. It's more that these ideas are valid whatever you're playing.
Mm, and you can jump in and out as you need or as your students need.
That's right.
And the book comes in PDF form and e-publisher form. So you can grab this and download it to your tablet or device. You can also just view it on any computer, I think, as a PDF. Is that right?
That's right. You can view it as a PDF, or else you can view it as what's called an EPUB file, which is Mac friendly. So you can download it. If you have a Mac, you download it onto your Mac and then you drop it onto your iPad or your iPhone or whatever else. I mean, it's the largest file. It's about a gigabyte. So it takes a little while to download. So you don't want to be alarmed by that. It will happen, depending on your internet connection.
It took me a while. I was speaking to Melody, who is one of your students, actually. I think, and she helped you with some of the tech on this. It's a big file, but you have got a lot of videos in there and they're high quality. So, and the sound and the audio is great too. So I understand why it's big. How do your exercises fit in with a teacher's approach to scales, arpeggios, Hannon, and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, honestly, we have to do scales. Scales are really important. And, you know, I've got this chapter in the book called Wiggly Snakes. And I guess from the time I first started teaching little children, I came up with this idea of wiggly snakes, because it seemed to me, why would we start learning a scale with eight notes? Let's start learning the problems of the scale are when the sum comes under and goes back again. So let's actually just work on that bit. So we end up with four or five notes. And we learn that, and then we put it into the scale. And then in order to increase the speed, you start to chunk the material together, because our brains can't transmit messages to our fingers as fast as we can play. And so the only way to get speed in our playing is by chunking material together. So that's why we can learn a scale as one gesture, or we can learn an arpeggio as one gesture. So I think all of those are really, really important. And interestingly, you talk about Cherney and Hannon. One of my pedagogy students who's doing a master's degree, she wants to actually apply the exercises to a whole lot of Cherney etudes and see how it all compares with people who don't have this kind of approach. So she's using various Cherney etudes and applying the method and then comparing and seeing whether it helps or not. So that's quite interesting. But, you know, I think particularly from a Chinese background, which she is, they absolutely live on Cherney. They learn in books and books of it. Right. And I've never really got into that ever, simply because I'd rather learn music that's more emotionally satisfying than one element of a Cherney exercise that goes on, with due respect to Cherney.
Yep. No, well, and there's no shortage of Cherney exercises out there either. There's a lifetime of it if you want to learn it. So I can imagine there'll be some teachers listening who are thinking, oh yeah, this sounds kind of good, Tim and Ray, but why would this be of relevance to me? What kind of teacher are you hoping to attract to your book?
Well, to be honest, I think it's any curious teacher, anyone who's passionate about their teaching, anyone who's passionate about learning maybe something that's going to give them something else that's going to help their students to play better. I have to say that the pianists that I know and the teachers that I've know who have bought the book already, they come back to me and they say, wow, I'm getting a lot out of this. So that's really my reward. I just want to share the ideas that I've found have been successful over my teaching life. And I want them to share those ideas with their students.
That's great. And I think people can download the book at, you better give us a web address, actually, Ray. I don't want to say it in case I get it wrong.
Yeah, my website, which is www.raydalil.com, and all the instructions for downloading the book are there. And you know, we'll be happy to give a discount to any of your followers, Tim.
Fantastic.
They can just put a code in, Tim Topham, discount 2019, and that should do it for them.
Okay, so Tim Topham discount 2019 will be the coupon code we use, and we'll be able to get a discount on Ray's book, which is great. Thank you very much for offering that. That's good. I will make sure we put a link to your website, because I know the spelling of your last name is a little bit confusing sometimes. I was calling you by the wrong surname for quite a while. I'll put that in the show notes for this episode, and a reminder of that discount link when we go live. So that will be there for you. Is there anything we've missed, Ray? I know it's been a very quick kind of chat, a bit of an overview. Is there anything else that you would like that we haven't covered that's important from your perspective?
No, I just think that I hope these ideas will be helpful to teachers. I hope they'll be helpful to students. I hope that they'll increase the students' enjoyment of what they're doing and make the playing easier. That's my mission.
Mm. Well, I hope you guys check out Ray's website. We'll put the link in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining me today, Ray. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I know that Melody has been trying to connect us for some time, ever since I went over to New Zealand to do a workshop a couple of years ago. So I'm really glad that we've been able to make it happen.
Thank you very much, Tim.
Pleasure.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's interview with Ray DeLille, and definitely head to the show notes page for all our details, links and things like that, topmusic.co/episode177. And do remember too that you've got a number of places to listen to this podcast now. You've got my Tim Topham app on the App Store for free. Download that. You can get updates on all the recent blog posts, social media and podcast episodes. You can also find us on the Apple Podcast Player, Overcast, all the podcast players around, but also on Spotify. So if you're a listener of Spotify and you spend a lot of time on there, just search for Tim Topham and you will be able to find my podcast and tune in where you're already listening to all your music. How cool is that? Next week on the podcast, I'm covering a topic that I've wanted to cover for a very long time, and it's about summer camps and workshops. Now, you're probably thinking, well, Tim, you've already covered that a few times before, and yes, we've written blog articles about it. But what I haven't really focused on is Australia as a market for summer camps and summer workshops and things like that. And because it's very popular and it's a culturally embedded experience for many children in America, I've really focused my time on expanding that area of the world when it comes to summer camps. But in next week's episode, we're actually interviewing some people who have been doing it in Australia with huge success. And we're actually going to get two for the price of one next week, because my guest actually teamed up with someone else in the arts area to run her summer camps and programs. And she's running these in Adelaide, Australia here. So for any Australian teachers out there who have looked at the summer camp programs that are run in America and gone, wow, I wish we could do that here in Australia, then the answer is yes, you can. And I'm going to explain exactly how it works, how it looks, and how these guys got started with some very, very clever marketing tactics and piggybacking on some other programs. So to really reduce their risk, we're going to unpack all that next week. I can't wait to share that with you. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I'll see you next week.
Now, just before you go, if you enjoyed today's show, I'd love for you to check out my Inner Circle piano teaching community. It's the go-to resource for piano teachers looking to continue their professional development, connect with other teachers and experts from around the world, and to access hundreds of world-class training resources, including our academy courses, lesson plans, teaching videos, technology help, and much more. Whether you're just starting out or have been working hard to build your studio for a while, the Inner Circle community will give you the skills, support, and confidence you need to grow the studio of your dreams, whether that's about teaching a small number of students one-on-one in your home or hiring a commercial space, employing other teachers, and building an entire music teaching empire. With courses on both the teaching and business side of running your studio, live coaching, and our thriving community forums, you can get quick answers to questions, set yourself challenges, get feedback on your ideas, and feel confident teaching in new and exciting ways. For more information on how to join us inside the Inner Circle today, head over to timtopham.com/community, and we'll see you on the inside.
We'll conclude this evening's entertainment.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. We'd love to help take your teaching to the next level as a member of our supportive community. Use the coupon Piano Podcast for $100 off an annual membership of Tim's Inner Circle today. To find out more, head to timtopham.com/community.